Who Done It by Job. The right place to start a book is at the beginning if you want to follow the author's plot unfold. If you cannot wait to know who done it, better read the last chapter first. The Bible, being amongst other things great literature, is full of surprises. One of these surprises is that in probably the first written of the 66 books, the villain is unmasked for the discerning reader. Once this is noticed, the understanding of the rest of the Bible is dramatically and radically different. Certainly, the book of Job is about three misguided comforters: the ignorance of Job, his sour wife, the creative power of God, and a tragic story of misfortune and restoration. But the most important part of the book lies elsewhere. Here it comes then. Right in chapter 1, verse 11, Satan says the following to God: "But stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." There it is. If God will strike Job, then Job's attitude will change. The next verse continues: "The Lord said to Satan, 'Very well, then, everything he has is in your hands, but on the man himself do not lay a finger.'" So apparently, God is going to strike Job, and this means Job is in Satan's hands. Are God and Satan in cahoots in the misfortunes that fall on Job? Do they both actively plan and execute the tragedies that strike him? When verse 16 states that the fire of God destroyed the sheep and herders, is this a literal statement? Definitely not. We know what is going on. God's protection must be removed before Satan can touch this obedient child of God. It is all there for us to read. God is the protector and Satan the destroyer. When God commands Satan not to touch the man himself, we again have confirmation of who destroys and who protects. These roles are confirmed so strongly in chapter 2 that only those who choose to be blind cannot see it. God challenges Satan in verse 3. "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil. And he still maintains his integrity, though you incited me against him without any reason." Skin for skin, Satan replied. A man will give all he has for his own life. "But stretch out your hand and strike his flesh and bones, and he will surely curse you to your face." The Lord said to Satan, "Very well, then, he is in your hands, but you must spare his life." There it is again. You, Satan, must spare his life. If that is not enough, read the next verse. "So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and afflicted Job with painful sores from the soles of his feet to the top of his head." Job 2, 3-8. One cannot miss it. Satan is the destroyer and God is the protector. All at once we have identified the source of trauma and tragedy, doubt and discouragement, pain and persecution. But we have also discovered much more. We have identified the Hebrew mindset that permeates all of the Bible. In the writer's mind, the all-powerful God is the source of all these misfortunes because he allows them at the horrible hand of the deceiving serpent, Satan, who deceives the whole world. Revelation 12, 9. Satan certainly deceived Job. While we can read the first two chapters and understand what is going on behind the scenes, Job was ignorant of all this negotiation. Throughout the narrative, he demonstrates that he believes all his misfortune comes from God. Here are some examples. 2:10 he replied, "You are talking like a foolish woman. Shall we accept good from God and not trouble in all this?" Job did not sin in what he said. 6. "For the arrows of the Almighty are in me. My spirit drinks in their poison. God's terrors are marshaled against me." Cf 10, 2, 3, 13, 21, 16, 7-9, 17, 6, 19, 6, 22. That is the key that unlocks the whole drama that will unfold in the following 65 books. Get it in your head. Cherish it. And the God who loved into death emerges from the pages that have been smudged and dusted with misapprehension about the character and the government of the Creator, Maintainer, Redeemer God. Will you be led astray by the deceiver as you read the scriptures? It has happened before. "You diligently study the scriptures that testify about me, yet you refuse to come to me to have life." John 5:39. 40. Take courage. It requires a great deal of effort to change the way we have thought for years or decades, but it is worth the effort since truth is the pearl of great price. There is more from the story. In this dialogue between God and the devil, we have illustrated the conflict between good and evil, between right and wrong, between love and selfishness, between light and darkness. God is being challenged from all sides by evil. The devil accuses Job of serving God for the protection he gets out of it. How shall the question be answered? For what reason or reasons does Job actually serve God? There is only one way to answer the accusation. God has to allow trouble to come to Job. It is a risk he has to take, and it is the cost of freedom. In taking the risk on Job, God opens himself to blame for being responsible for all the evil that comes to Job. The great news from the story of Job is, however, that he comes through with flying colors on this central issue. While Job has many misunderstandings about God, his loyalty is unsullied. He does not turn on God because of his misfortunes. He is not God's friend for what he can get out of him. Here is a man who operates on the principles of heaven. But then God has, and continues to be accused of evil in the creation of every being who started out good and turned bad. Since God knew the future, he is responsible for all evil beings even though they started out good. He knew it would end up being bad. Therefore he is party to the cause of evil. Some would argue that God went ahead and created evil because his rightness would be all the more visible and prominent as a result of the contrast between good and evil. This is where the cross of Calvary finds its centrality in Christian thinking. At the cross, God in Christ was faced with the supreme test of his being. Is there any selfishness in God? To Christ it appears that he is dying forever at the hands of his creation. Shall he die forever or shall he go back to heaven? When Christ cries out, "My God, why hast thou forsaken me?" Matthew 27:46, he expresses a blackness of depression that prevented his seeing through the gates of the grave. At that moment Jesus believed he was dying forever. That is the triumph of the cross. God would rather die than have his creation lose hope and life. That is the magnificent answer of love to the supposed selfishness of God. Perhaps it would have been better to place the book of Job right at the beginning of the Old Testament. In that way many of the misconceptions created by the first five books would have been prevented. But then again possibly not. Most readers seem to have missed the implications of what the book teaches in essence. The right perspective is not easy to gain and to maintain because the evil one has sowed weeds in the wheat. It takes a lot of mental weeding to keep the wheat clean in our minds, but it can be done and must be done by God's friends. So do it.